Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Radio.com app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
At the point, drills it around behind the goal. Backstrom, who had the first Caps goal, got it out to Ovechkin, the shot. They score on the replay. Hutton made the save, but nobody took out the man in front of the net. It was tapped in, and now the Caps, with a power play goal, have retaken the lead.
That was Buffalo television on the call last night. That was a TJ Oshie power play goal that gave the Caps a 2-1 first period lead. Good night for Oshie, a goal and two assists. Good night for the Caps in their opener last night. A 6-4 win against Buffalo. Another against Buffalo tonight. In fact, four of the Caps' first six games are against the Sabres. Six of their first 15 games are against Buffalo in this very oddly scheduled pandemic-related NHL season. They're going to play back-to-backs virtually against everybody this year. It's not going to happen every single setting, but for the most part, when you play a team, you're going to play them the next night or two nights later as well, trying to bunch up the games when these teams are in the cities and keep them in those cities without having them travel as much. Good morning, everybody. It is a Football Friday, still divisional playoff round weekend. One of the great weekends of the sports calendar. Now, last week, our first ever tripleheader Saturday, tripleheader Sunday of Super Wild Card. That was pretty good. I mean, really, that is a nice little wrinkle to the postseason. And again, many of you still, in fact, I've heard this many times on television, on NFL-related shows, with people referring to the playoff format last weekend as just a one-year unique playoff format due to the pandemic. Not true. They had already made the plan to expand to seven playoff teams per conference. That is, right now, the playoff format moving forward. Next year, with or without the pandemic in full force. You know, hopefully we all get vaccinated by this time next year and it's over. But no, that is the new playoff format moving forward. Seven teams per conference, tripleheader Saturday, tripleheader Sunday, one team getting the bye. There are a lot of people that don't like it, but that was the plan that was voted on by the NFL players and owners in the expanded playoff format. So in many ways, divisional round playoff weekend which used to be, I think for many of you, the best of the playoff weekends because you had the top four seeds, the top two in each conference in action for the first time against the wild card winners from the week before, four excellent matchups, you know, a Saturday late afternoon game, a Saturday night game, an early Sunday game, and a later Sunday afternoon game, and that was better than wild card weekend. But it's going to be hard to top six games. You know, the last time I checked, six games is better than four games. And yeah, the top two seeds, the Chiefs and the Packers, were missing. I get that, but I don't know. It'll seem like a bit of a step back this weekend. With that said, I'm excited for all four games. We're going to talk about all four games. And a little bit later on in the program this morning at 8 a.m., my friend Steven Spector, who was a producer at 980 for a few years, many years back, Steven was on the air with me the day that we had the earthquake back in August of 2011. We've played that audio many times in the past. Steven is the sports director at 610 Sports Talk Radio in Kansas City. We're going to talk to Steven at 8 about the Chiefs. They are the favorite to repeat. They are 10-point favorites to win in the early Sunday game at Arrowhead against Cleveland. And then Chase Young is supposed to call in. And yes, I will ask him why he and the defense didn't play well against Tampa Bay on Saturday night. I'm not going to back off asking him about why the defense, and him in particular, didn't have his best game. So stay tuned for that. 8:25, he's scheduled to call in. It's not unusual sometimes when we're told that some of these people will call in and they don't, but hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to the man that will be, without question, the Defensive Rookie of the Year when those awards are announced. By the way, somebody asked me on Twitter yesterday or the day before, when do those awards get announced? All of those awards, MVP, Defensive MVP, Rookies of the Year, I'm pretty sure they all get announced on Super Bowl weekend. I think that's part of the Super Bowl Saturday and Saturday night, along with, you know, the Hall of Fame information. I could be wrong about that, but that's my recollection. Darris is in today for Anthony. I think that's the way they've done it in the past.
That is the way I'm familiar with it as well. They do it Saturday night. It's usually on the same network that is broadcasting the game.
Broadcasting the Super Bowl this year? Is it Fox?
It is CBS this year.
It's CBS this year. Yes. Okay, so you know what? Good. We'll get Nance and Romo for the Super Bowl. I'm actually excited about that. I think Nance and Romo actually now are my favorite of the number one teams. I'm not into Michaels and Collinsworth anymore. Aikman and Buck, you can have them. And then really we're talking about Nance and Romo, and then the Monday night crew. You know, I think Steve Levy did a nice job with Greasy and with Lewis Riddick. I thought it was fine. I thought it was a hell of a lot better than Tessitore. Nance and Romo, I think, have become my favorite of the number one teams on the NFL, broadcast. So I think we get that then on CBS Saturday night. So if you're wondering when will Chase Young be named Defensive Rookie of the Year, it'll be the night before the Super Bowl, which, as I look at my calendar, I believe that is February 6th, unless I have a wrong calendar here. But February 6th would be the Saturday prior to Sunday, February 7th, which is Super Bowl Sunday. Anyway, Chase Young supposed to call in at 8:25. I do want to just take a moment on the Caps because I watched some of this game, not all of it. Okay, look, most of you know I'm a big hoops guy. I watched some college hoops last night. I watched Gonzaga again late last night. Good God, they are good. I'm not so sure. Gonzaga and Michigan, I've mentioned to me, are the two teams that I have seen that I think are the best teams in the country. Let me just tell you that Gonzaga has three, not one, not two, but three potential lottery picks in Timmy Kispert and Suggs. They are just loaded with pros. It's amazing what they've built out there. But Gonzaga, who's never won a national championship and is yet to make it to a Final Four. No, that's not true. My fault. They lost in the finals to North Carolina. Gonzaga has not won a national championship. They are right now the odds-on favorite to win the national championship. I really like Michigan. I like Villanova a lot. I've not watched Baylor a lot. But anyway, I was watching some Big Ten basketball last night, primarily Purdue and Indiana. Purdue looked really good. And then some of the NBA, and I'm gonna play for you here shortly what Shaquille O'Neal said about the Harden trade and about Harden in particular. He was pretty rough on James Harden last night, and then about Barkley talking about the mix of Durant and Kyrie Irving and James Harden and whether or not they would win the Eastern Conference Championship. By the way, the Rockets without Harden last night and without John Wall, who didn't play because of a sore left knee, actually won a game. They beat the San Antonio Spurs without Wall, without Harden, just a different looking team. Anyway, I was flipping back and forth a little bit with the Caps game, and I actually flipped it right in time for what I think was the play of the game. It was a deep turnover by Buffalo after they had cut the lead to 4-3 early in the third. And 25 seconds later, there is one of the worst turnovers you will see right in front of their own net. And Vranas takes the turnover, is handed the gift, and he scores, and it's 5-3, and it really felt, even though there was a whole third period to play, it really felt like that was the backbreaker for Buffalo because they had rallied from 4-1 down. All right, Backstrom scored the first goal of the year, Oshie Ovechkin assisting. Then Buffalo tied it up, and then the play we gave you, Oshie on the power play goal with Carlson and Ovi assisting. Then Carlson had a breakaway goal after a turnover to give the Caps a 3-1 lead. Brendan Dillon scored. And then here came Buffalo, 4-2 at the end of the second, 4-3 on a goal by McCabe early in the third. And it looked like the Sabres had all the momentum in the world. And then a big turnover. Verona takes it, scores unassisted, 5-3 Caps. And that was pretty much it. They got a late goal after Buffalo had cut it to 5-4 from Hathaway. And they win the opener 6-4. This is, you know, yesterday we had Tarik El-Bashir on the show talking about, or 2 days ago we had Tarik El-Bashir on the show from The Athletic talking about the hockey season. It's a very unique hockey season, okay? You're talking about a limited schedule. You're talking about owners that are going to lose, according to reports, billions. The losses will be into the billions. This is a big leap of faith for a lot of wealthy, fortunate for them, wealthy NHL owners who are going to take an absolute beating when you combine last year and this year. As we've talked about, hockey is one of those sports that needs the live gate. They don't rely as their primary or their you know, carrying source of revenue, their TV contracts. They just don't have the TV contracts that the NFL has, that the NBA has, that Major League Baseball has. They don't. That college football has in a lot of these conferences. They don't have those kinds of deals. So without fans being allowed into these arenas to generate their primary source of revenue, it's a big problem for a lot of these teams. They're moving forward. They don't want to lose the momentum. Remember what had happened when they had the strike year and the lost year. It really did some damage to the league. I think they understand that. They're going to go ahead and play, and they're going to lose all this money. Just remember, the next time you jump on an owner for not playing a player, or for an owner who, you know, you look at their profits and they're significant, and then you take the players' sides against these owners. Right now, what the NHL owners are doing, Ted Leonsis, one of them, is they are investing heavily to keep a sport that many of you really love alive. This is what entrepreneurs do. This is why many of these owners got into the position they got into. They were risk takers. A lot of you that have just been employees before don't understand why the owners make as much as they make. and deserve to make as much as they make. Why? Because they took the risk. They put up their money, or they raised capital and put their necks on the line with investors to start businesses, to get themselves into this position. Right now, it should be acknowledged by those of you that are hardcore hockey fans what the NHL is doing, what your hockey owner, Ted Leonsis, is doing. You know, the next time you have criticism of Ted, and I've had plenty of them over the years, just remember that this is an incredible leap of faith by many NHL owners. Not all of them are in the same boat, but many of them are taking a major financial risk. Now, most of them are used to it. Most of them have an entrepreneurial spirit and risk-taking personality, and they're used to it. They don't want this game to go away. They're investing in this, investing in it by taking massive losses so that they can put a game out there for a fan base that they hope will stick with it, even though it's a different, you know, version of it, and they can't go to the games, and that when people can come to the games, they'll come flooding back. And eventually, they'll recoup a lot of this. For some of the teams, it will take years to recoup these losses. Years. Anyway, good win for the Caps. I was a bit surprised, especially after their meek exit in the postseason against the Islanders, that there was as much confidence in this team coming into the season. But if you look at a lot of the NHL predictions, the Caps are, you know, somewhere in that top 5 to top 10 range of teams in the league again. I mean, this is a veteran team, obviously. And when you look at it, and you saw it last night in terms of their veterans with Backstrom and Ovi, a big part of what they were doing. And there is this sense, I would guess, in a season that's going to rely on a lot of teams and a lot of experienced teams, and perhaps a little bit of a lean towards those experienced teams doing well. The Caps are being given some preseason love. They got off to a good start last night. Samsonov in goal ultimately gave up 4 goals in the game on 26 shots. So he had 22 saves on the night. At some point we'll see Vanecek as well. All right, enough about hockey. I want to get to what Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley said last night on the TNT pregame show about the Harden trade and about the new-look Brooklyn Nets. We'll do that when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on Team 980, team980.com, and also on the radio.com app.
The only way to stream the Team 980 on your phone or smart speaker is with the radio.com app. Presented by Regency Furniture. This weekend, shop the 72-hour Red Tag Savings event at Regency Furniture with Red Tag Savings up to 72% off store-wide. Free delivery and no interest financing.
Get to a couple what he gots, including what Shaquille O'Neal said last night about James Harden and what Charles Barkley said last night about the new look Brooklyn Nets. You'll want to hear both of those. We'll get to a lot of NFL talk, smell test. We'll talk with somebody from Kansas City about the Chiefs, and Chase Young is supposed to be on the show later on this morning at 8:25. Before we get to a couple of those what do you gots, what Shaq said and what Barkley said, there was a lot of big news in the NFL yesterday with related to the coaching situations. The Jets hired the 49ers defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh. And then Jacksonville made the big hire that a lot of people were expecting. They hired Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is back in coaching and taking his first swing at professional coaching. It is, and I talked about this during the season, that Jacksonville was going to be one of those opportunities that was really attractive to anybody. Jacksonville has the most cap space entering the upcoming season. They have roughly $71 million in cap space in what will be a reduced salary cap number because of the pandemic, from $198 million down to a projected $175 million. They got $71 million in cap space, $10 million more than what the Colts are projected to have. They have a boatload of draft choices from some of the trades they've made in recent years. They obviously have the number one overall pick, which almost everybody expects will be Trevor Lawrence. In addition to that, they've got another first rounder, one of the picks that they got in the Jalen Ramsey trade. They've got the Rams' first-round pick, which is 25th overall. They've got a couple of additional fourth-rounders. One of them came from the Ramsey trade. They got a second-round pick from the Ngakoue trade to Minnesota. And they got a couple of picks back for Ronnie Harrison as well. So the Jags are entering the 2021 offseason with the most salary cap space and an inordinate number of draft choices, including the number one pick in the draft, which, because they have another first rounder, I would not expect them to deal. You know, their quarterback situation isn't that attractive. Mike Glennon was starting games for them at the end of the year. Gardner Minshew was playing but played hurt. They even played that guy Jake Luton. But they have talent, too. That's the other part about this job that's attractive. You know, defensively, DJ Chark looks like the real deal. Keelan Cole's always been pretty good. The kid from Colorado, Shenault Jr., is a player. You know, the guy James Robinson was really effective, the running back from Illinois State. Jacksonville, if you watch them at all this year, they were in a lot of games. You know, this was a team that obviously finished 1-15, but they were in a ton of games this year. You know, they lost to the Titans early by 3. They beat the Colts in the opener. That's a long time ago. I understand that. But there was a stretch there where they nearly beat the Packers at Lambeau. They nearly beat the Texans. They nearly beat the Browns. They went to overtime with the Vikings. And then down the stretch, when it became apparent that the Jets were actually still trying and that the number one pick could be theirs, they got blown out a bunch down the stretch. But Jacksonville offensively was pretty competitive. Defensively, they've got some talent. Miles Jack has really turned into the player that I think a lot of people thought he would be coming out of UCLA. They've got some talent defensively. It'll be interesting to watch Urban Meyer fill out his staff. But this was, of the openings, really the most attractive in terms of being able to take something that hasn't been very good and build it into something very quickly. Now, of course, drafting Trevor Lawrence, and more likely than not playing Trevor Lawrence from the jump, because it's not like they have another option, they will go as far as their young quarterback takes them here in the next couple of years. So his development, how fast that happens, will dictate really how much Jacksonville's able to win. But Urban Meyer stepped in to a situation that not a lot of college coaches step into. You know, over the years, when you think about the various coaches that have succeeded, you know, it's not like they stepped into great situations. Jimmy Johnson being, you know, probably the most successful, you know, college to pro coach in the history of, you know, the list of college coaches going to pros. You know, Dallas was terrible when he inherited the team. They were in free fall with a new owner, with an older team, and he totally rebuilt that team into a two-time Super Bowl winner with him. And really, if you give him credit for Barry Switzer's Super Bowl team, 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. You know, Johnson had a tremendous amount of success. Pete Carroll didn't enter a situation that looked really promising, but he was successful in Seattle. I don't know that a college coach has ever come into a situation that's been more attractive from the jump than Jacksonville. And I understand they're a 1-15 team. And he'll always be able to say, I took a 1-15 team and I turned it into whatever he turned it into. But really, this is a 1-15 team with some talent, and with the ability to add a significant amount of talent right from the jump. And I think Urban Meyer in free agency being the coach will make Jacksonville much more attractive than it would have been with another hire. Very interested. I've always thought Urban Meyer was an incredible head coach. He's won everywhere he's gone. He's put so many players into the NFL. And, you know, it didn't matter where he was coaching, whether it was Utah when he had Alex Smith. You know, Urban Meyer was a big mentor and a real believer in Alex Smith and turned Alex Smith into the player he became, which ultimately led to him being the number one pick in the 2005 draft. And then he went to Florida where he won, you know, two national championships. And then obviously at Ohio State and the success he has had there. Listen to Urban Meyer's overall record in college. It's really amazing. 187-32. That's his college record. He's never had in any season coaching college football a losing season. His first 2 years as a head coach at Bowling Green in 2001 and 2002, 8-3, 9-3. The 2 years he was in at Utah in the Mountain West, 10-2, 12-0. Remember when they won the Fiesta Bowl? And then at Florida, 9-3, 13-1, 9-4, 13-1, 13-1, 8-5 in his final year. Ohio State, 12-0, 12-2, 14-1, 12-1, 11-2, 12-2, 10-1. All right, 83-9 at Ohio State. 187-32. I mean, that is one hell of a winning record. 85.3% of his games he wins. I think he's going to be very successful in the NFL, and I think he enters a very attractive situation. With, by the way, to me anyway, the quarterback that looks like a no-brainer. I think every other quarterback, there are lots of red flags. You may think there's some red flags on Trevor Lawrence, and I wouldn't disagree that he'll throw some picks, that he'll force some balls into coverage, that, I don't know, man, though, watching him in the last couple of years, Trevor Lawrence looks like a big-time NFL quarterback. Whereas Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones, Kyle Trask, you know, anybody else you want to mention as possibilities for the first round, lots of question marks, even though there are going to be several quarterbacks, as there always are, taken in the first round. Anyway, going to be really interesting to see the staff that he puts together down there. I think he's going to be able to attract a first-rate staff and how quickly it takes him to turn it around. 1-15 with a rookie quarterback, it's very possible he'll have his first losing season ever as a head coach in that first year, but I wouldn't give it that long in terms of a turnaround and a contender in Jacksonville. All right, I wanted to get to a couple of what do you gots.
All right, all right, all right.
What do you got?
So last night on the TNT show, prior to the games that they had, Ernie Johnson with Kenny Smith, Charles Barkley, and Shaquille O'Neal, obviously the big topic was, you know, wingnut James Harden forcing his way out of Houston, and even Kyrie Irving still a no-show in Brooklyn. So first Ernie turned to Shaquille O'Neal to ask him about James Harden forcing his way out of Houston via a trade and what Shaq thought. Here's what he said.
Yes and no. One is the business of basketball, but you know, when you say you gave the city your all, that ain't true. And I'm about to say some things, and keep in mind I have G14 classification to say these things. You asked for Dwight Howard, we gave him to you. Didn't work out. You asked for Chris Paul, we gave him to you. You asked for some shooters, we gave it to you. We asked for Westbrook, your homeboy from Little League, we gave him to you. Didn't work out. And when you say I gave you everything, I say no, you didn't. Because the last five games, when it comes to elimination, you're 1-4. You've been shooting 41%, 24% from three, 32 assists, and 27 turnovers. I used to be like James. I used to come home and complain, man, he didn't do it, and my father, rest in peace, Sergeant Philip Harris, used to say, but what the hell did you do? He ain't do nothing. He ain't step up when he was supposed to step up. So, you know, when you're the man and you make all the money, you make 30, 40 million a year, it's a big responsibility. Chuck has said this many times. When you're the man, you got a big responsibility, it's all on you. So when it comes time to show up, he ain't show up. So I know a lot of people in Houston, glad he's gone. So now he got his little super team. He got to win this year. If he don't win this year, it's a bust, period.
That was Shaquille O'Neal. Harsh G14 classification on James Harden. They're in much love for James Harden. If you've been reading a lot about this trade, we had Wilbon on the show yesterday. There isn't a lot of support for James Harden anywhere. You know, his teammates, Boogie Cousins and John Wall, both, you know, Cousins really got after him. Cousins talked about how disrespectful and unprofessional he was and how they're going to be much better off without him. You know, if you're a basketball guy and you've watched Harden over the years, you know, there are nights where it's like, wow, man, this dude just can flat out score. But the way they've played basketball with James Harden, and I'm not talking about the OKC early teams that had Durant and Westbrook. He was not James Harden then. You know, that was not James Harden. James Harden was a third wheel. He didn't start. James Harden became James Harden in Houston. But if you watch the way they played, there isn't a basketball person that enjoyed watching that. Watching one player with four standing and watching that one player operate. You can't win that way playing basketball. Maybe at certain levels you can, not in the NBA. Nobody I watched or read yesterday has James Harden's back. Nobody that I've read or watched has Kyrie Irving's back. This was Charles Barkley when asked by Ernie Johnson, so will Brooklyn be the favorite to get to the finals?
I don't think it's even close to a guarantee. Ernie, you got the only one of those three guys who has proven to me he's not selfish and not a mean guy is KD. KD went to Golden State and he sacrificed. James Harden and Kyrie Irving have never shown me like, no, I just want to win. That's the most important thing. You got one guy, KD, he's unselfish. The other two guys ain't proved to me. They just care about their numbers. And I don't think they're going to make the sacrifice. They're going to get less shots. Are those two guys going to say, you know what, I'm just going to play hard and play defense and not worry about my individual numbers? And to me, that's a hell no. I don't think these two guys.
You don't think he did that in Oklahoma City?
Yeah, you know, he wasn't James Harden then.
All right, he wasn't.
He wasn't James Harden then.
Right, I got you.
And
but the X factor to this whole thing right now is Kyrie Irving.
But that's just my point. See, this is what I think happened. This is just me thinking. I think they are sick of Kyrie already and says, we better make this James Harden trade because we cannot count on Kyrie. That's just me talking. A wild card is an understatement, Ernie. Kyrie has not proven he could be trusted as a leader. He can trust it as a guy who can be part of a championship team. But when he was asked to be a leader in Cleveland before LeBron there, we can say that was a failure. When he was asked to be a leader in Boston, we can say that could be a failure. And when he went to Brooklyn last, remember, after early season, he's like, we ain't got no players here. So when you, listen, Ernie, when you are the man, it's night and day. You can be all these Robins. You can be, I'll tell you what shows the most, and Kenny Shagner, every coach in football or baseball, I don't know about baseball, in basketball and football, every coach ain't a head coach. And every guy cannot deal with the pressure of being the man. Like, some of the things that were said about me, hey, listen, it hurts my feeling back in the day. Don't anymore. But like I say, it's a responsibility, and James and Kyrie have not proven to me, and they don't have to prove it to me, they have to prove it to the basketball world.
That was Shaquille O'Neal on the Nets situation. You know, you really have to be a contrarian to root for the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, and I am typically a contrarian in general, especially when it comes to wagering. But you really, as a sports fan, have to relish and enjoy being out there by yourself because they are not an attractive team to root for. It is an incredible collection of individually talented players. I thought it was going to fail with Kyrie and KD to begin with. I think it's got a bigger chance of failing now. There are teams in the Eastern Conference, and then there are franchises with individual talents. I don't see it working. I could be wrong. Basketball's strange, man. In basketball, it comes down to talent. You know, this is the one sport where the most talented teams win. Always. It's the least unpredictable sport of the four major sports. You know, this divisional round playoff weekend that we're getting ready to watch, it is totally possible that there will be massive upsets and that we'll end up with an AFC championship game of Baltimore and Cleveland or an NFC championship game of the Rams and the Bucks versus the favorites. That is possible. It's not possible in the NBA that the most talented teams lose. It rarely happens. Miami making it to the NBA Finals last year, I enjoyed so much because they weren't the most talented team. And so it was a rarity. But they didn't win it, did they? The most talented team, the team with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, won it. Brooklyn is talented, individually talented players. If somehow Steve Nash or whomever is coaching that team gets it into a position to compete for an NBA title into the NBA Finals against, say, the Lakers or the Clippers. And right now, that would be my guess. The Lakers are the favorite. I still think the Clippers in a best of seven against the Lakers, if they can get it together from a chemistry standpoint, would have a chance. That would be something else if Brooklyn ended up making it. I don't know if there's a team in sports I'm rooting against more than that working. I think it would be a terrible precedent to set. All right, when we come back, we're going to focus the first part of our conversation today, football-wise, on your Washington football team. I want to know what you think the quarterback room should be next year. This is your chance. By the way, only like actual possibilities. Don't give me like, well, maybe you know, maybe the Bills or the Chiefs decide to move on from Mahomes or Josh Allen. That's an extreme. But I want actual possibilities, like the quarterbacks they have on the roster and a couple that we've talked about with respect to free agency and or trades and drafted quarterbacks, whether it's in the first round or the second round. I want your three quarterback room. I want the three quarterbacks that you want on the roster. If they keep three, let's assume that they will, on, you know, in late August, early September of 2021. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. I'll give you my answer when we come back, and then I want your calls on that. What's the quarterback room that you prefer for 2021?
The only way to stream the Team 980 on your phone or smart speaker is with the Radio.com app. Presented by... Here's what's trending on the Team 980.
All right, what's trending is the Caps beat Buffalo in their opener last night, 6-4. Oshie had a goal and two assists. Ovechkin had two assists. Carlson with a goal and an assist. Same for Backstrom. Verana had an unassisted early goal in the third off a bad Buffalo turnover. Dillon and Hathaway added goals as well. Another tonight on the road against the Sabres. The NFL added Urban Meyer to its head coaching ranks, hired by Jacksonville. Jacksonville projected to have the most cap space entering the 2021 season with two first rounders, including the number one overall. 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh is the new head coach in New York for the Jets. He gets a 5-year deal. NBA last night, shorthanded Houston without John Wall, who was injured, and with Harden traded, beat the Spurs 109-105. Meantime, there was an injury in Portland. Big man Nurkic fractured his fist in a loss to the Pacers. Four Alabama players declared for the draft, including quarterback Mac Jones, wide receiver Jalen Waddle, cornerback Patrick Surtain, and defensive lineman Christian Barmore. Remember, Devontae Smith in the draft because he completed his eligibility at Alabama. Bama right now projected to have somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 6 first-round selections. I want to tell you real quickly that Window Nation is kicking off the new year with their most popular deal. Call today, put no money down and make no payments. Pay no interest for 2 full years. Get 2 free windows for every 2 you buy. Call 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. All right, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What's your quarterback room for 2021? Who's on the roster opening day 2021? You know, you can give me, you know, your starter and your 2 backups. Or you may decide to go with 2, which is fine as well. I want really the actual possibilities. Like, at 19, who you could draft. I mean, don't give me some stupid trade to get up to number 1 to take Trevor Lawrence. That's not going to happen. They don't have enough draft capital to do that. And there's no chance that Urban Meyer, as the new head coach in Jacksonville holding the number 1 pick, is going to pass on Trevor Lawrence. But even if he did, which I don't expect, Washington doesn't have to have that kind of draft capital to get up there. You could give me some sort of trade to draft up a little bit higher into the first round to take a quarterback that you legitimately think could be there. Or you could give me a quarterback in the second or third round. Let me just mention this. I may change my mind on this, on the draft. I'm not drafting a quarterback right now. I just think it's way too much of a crapshoot, and I think there are better options. Let me give you my quarterback room, all right, for late August, early September 2021, and I want yours at 301-230-0980. First of all, I am releasing Alex Smith if he doesn't retire, and I'm taking that $13-plus million in cap savings, in cap availability. Alex was terrific. He will be the comeback player of the year. And he gave this team a season to remember, performances to remember, especially given the expectation level. What a great, great comeback it was. What a great story it was. Alex Smith, I do not want on the roster next year. I've been wrong at every turn on Alex Smith, and it's very possible that this was like year one of this comeback that's going to be super impressive, like the best is yet to come. I just wouldn't wager on it. So I'm taking the cap savings on that. I am absolutely bringing Kyle Allen back for the $800,000 roughly on the restricted free agent opportunity that they have to pay him the league minimum for 1 year. Kyle Allen is a part of the quarterback room. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put a second round tender on Taylor Heinicke. I don't believe, given that he's only started and played in 5 NFL games, I just don't believe right now that there's like this real big market for Taylor Heinicke. I'm not buying that at all. I don't see that as a legitimate possibility. If you put a second round tender on him, it's 1 year, roughly $3 to $3.5 million for Heinicke. That's nothing for a guy that could compete for the starting job with Kyle Allen, who would be on your roster for about $800,000 for 1 year. Those two are on my roster in August, training camp, etc., and are on the roster next year. But I want a third veteran quarterback. This is the path I've advocated for a few months now in terms of the 2021 plan, or certainly several weeks now when it became clear that they did not have, that Dwayne wasn't going to be the guy, and that more likely than not, I mean, there was that moment. I mean, it was not that long ago, probably a month ago, that we all thought that Alex Smith was coming back to be the starter. But to me, I've been a fan of Matt Stafford since he came into the league. I think those of you who consider Matt Stafford to be a losing quarterback, you know, a quarterback that you can't win with, because why? Because he's never won. You know, I just think that is misleading. I think Matt Stafford's been on some bad football teams. I think Matt Stafford has been with some very questionable coaching staffs, not necessarily a head coaching staff. I mean, to me, the 2014 Detroit Lions that went to the playoffs and lost to the Cowboys with Jim Caldwell at head coach, I think that that was a well-coached team, and he had a very good year that year. I think they made a mistake, the Lions did, by letting Caldwell go. I thought they were a much better franchise with Caldwell at the helm. This is a guy whose record, if this is all you rely on in evaluating a quarterback, is 74-90-1, and he's been in the postseason two times and has started two postseason games. In the two postseason games, he's been in the playoffs three times. In the three postseason games, his first one against New Orleans back in 2011, in the 2011 season, he was outstanding in a 45-28 loss to the Saints, a game that was much closer than really the score indicated. He threw for 380 and three touchdowns in the game. They had a bad defense. In the 2014 season, they played a playoff game against the Cowboys wild card weekend. He threw for 323, a touchdown, and an interception. A game, to me, I'll never forget this game. This is a game they should have won. There was an egregious penalty against the Cowboys on a huge third down throw to, I think it was Brandon Pettigrew or Eric Ebron. It was one of their tight ends, Stafford threw to. The flag came out, and then they picked it up. Dallas got the ball, and ultimately, down 20-17, Dallas went in for a game-winning drive, one of the few that Tony Romo orchestrated in big spots, and they beat Detroit 24-20. But they were up 20-17, they were driving in the fourth quarter, and they had a terrible overturn of a call that was flagged and then picked up, almost as if, you know, Fox and the NFL networks and the NFL said, yeah, we're better off with the Cowboys advancing in the postseason than the Lions. And then in a playoff game after the 2016 season in Seattle, a game that was much more competitive than the final 26-6 score indicated, Stafford wasn't great. But he really was up against a phenomenal defense that day and a phenomenal performance by Russell Wilson in that game. They ended up losing the game 26-6, but it was 13-6 in the fourth quarter with the Lions having the ball and a chance to take to tie it up. The score was a little bit not reflective of how tight the game was through about three and a half quarters. In fact, I'm looking at the box score right now. There were 8.5 minutes left, and it was still 13-6 Seattle in that game. I'm a Matt Stafford fan. I've been a Matt Stafford fan. I think he's had a very good career. This is a guy that has thrown for over 45,000 yards, 282 touchdowns, 144 picks. You know, he's been a risk taker as a thrower during the course of his career. But I like Matt Stafford, and I think Matt Stafford, if Detroit decides to trade him, and I don't know why they necessarily would unless they're going to go, you know, in if they're going to they're going to really make an attempt in the draft. But if he is available for a second or a combination of a second, a third, and a player, you know, there are a few players that are on my absolutely not list, right? Chase Young is on that list. Daron Payne is on that list. Terry McLaurin is on that list. Those would be the three untouchables. I'd probably throw Montez Sweat onto the untouchable list as well. But that would be my quarterback room. Matt Stafford, Kyle Allen, Taylor Heineke. By the way, in that quarterback room, Matt Stafford is the starter. You're not trading for Matt Stafford. And then, by the way, it would probably be advantageous for Washington to give him a new long-term deal to lessen the cap hit next year and the year after, when the cap's going to be a little bit lower than anticipated. He's coming in to start. And you've got Allen and you've got Heineke on one-year deals, and the two of them are competing to be the backup, and whomever is, you know, loses the backup position is your third-string guy and on the roster. That's the way I would play it. How would you play it? Your calls. I see you on hold. Stay there. your quarterback room, all right, something reasonable and achievable for 2021 is what? 301-230-0980. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com, and Radio.com app.